v. Nelson. I note once again for the record that Judge Sparks is not here. However, he will be participating fully on the record. Lieutenant Colonel Wilson, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, sir.
Major Barrows, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government?
Yes, sir.
Very well, then. Please proceed.
Chief Judge, if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Judge. Chief Judge, members of the court, may it please the court. For an affirmative waiver to be effective, there must be the intentional relinquishment of a known right. The known right in this case being the appellant's right to have the members instructed upon the reasonably raised defense of ineptitude. Now, as I will discuss in a moment, in a case like this, where the trial defense counsel obviously recognizes that the appellant's mental health issues play a critical role in this case, and then the trial defense counsel himself repeatedly elicits evidence that the mental health issues are linked to the appellant's inability to perform her duties, but then the trial defense counsel inexplicably fails to request an instruction on the special defense of ineptitude, then it is apparent that there was no intentional relinquishment of a known right in this case. Now, before I go further into the issue of waiver, I'd like to take a step back and just talk about...
So are we then in the area of IAC, ineffective assistance of counsel?
No, Judge. We're still in the area of plain error, Your Honor.
But you're teeing it up in a way where you're saying the whole focus of the defense was this ineptitude and yet did not ask for the ineptitude defense.
It does seem like that, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. The trial defense counsel in this case, from 2 out of the 3 government witnesses, elicited information regarding the appellant's mental health struggles. The first witness, the second line supervisor, Tech Sergeant DM, specifically said something to the effect of, I knew that her mental health issues prevented her from carrying out her duties, which seems to be the defense of ineptitude. It can't get much plainer than that. So then the question becomes, well, then why wasn't the instruction requested at the tail end? And ineffective assistance of counsel is one potential way that maybe it happened, Your Honor. I mean, another potential way is that it was just a misunderstanding of how the defense or how these facts actually functioned in this case. It very well could have been that the defense counsel in this case believed that these facts could go particularly against negligence, the element of negligence in dereliction of duty. But the reality is, as we know, it doesn't. Ineptitude is very individualized to the individual person at issue, whereas negligence is a reasonable person standard, and that individual acts that occur with an individual can't really go to do anything with the reasonable person standard at that point, Your Honor.
So, counsel, how do you distinguish the argument that counsel made from a partial lack of mental responsibility defense? Because your position is that ineptitude is an affirmative defense, whereas under 9 RCM 912K something, that it would actually be the partial lack of a mental responsibility.
Yes, Your Honor. The very short answer to that question is that the President has made it so. Generally speaking, 916 is a more generalized statute regarding defenses.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, ineptitude is a very carved-out defense that only occurs in Article 92, dereliction of duty. It doesn't exist anywhere else. So it's a more specific defense than the defense of partial mental responsibility. So that's the short answer. The longer answer is the statutes of the canons of statutory construction talk about how the specific trumps the general. This defense is very specifically just pointed at dereliction of duty. Therefore, it would trump over the more generalized defenses of something like partial mental responsibility. Although certainly the same facts that go into both ineptitude and partial mental responsibility, they could be the same facts, but at the end of the day, they function differently, Your Honor.
And the point of that they function differently is your point that because one is an affirmative defense and that the other goes against an element of the offense, is that the distinction you're drawing?
No, Your Honor. I believe that they would, at the end of the day, they would all be affirmative defenses. As this case, or as this court has pointed out in Wellenbring versus Narotter, an affirmative defense generally can either be a defense that negates an element of an offense, or it could be something like a justification or an excuse type of defense. Now, in this case, the defense believes that ineptitude is specifically an excuse type of defense. It's talking about even though the elements have been met, there is a legal excuse that the president has created in this situation as to why we're not going to hold her criminally responsible for what has occurred. Even if we take the position that I believe the government took, that it's an offense that negatives an element, which I don't believe it is for the exact reasons that we already talked about regarding the objective reasonable person standard versus the very individualized. But even if you said that somehow the appellant's ineptitude somehow would override either the negligence or perhaps the knowledge standard, but it doesn't. But even if you took that position, there would still be an affirmative defense, Your Honor, at the end of the day. So going back to your question of, is it a distinction of the affirmative defense versus non-affirmative defense? No, they're both affirmative defenses, Your Honor.
Counsel, we have two very different positions in the briefs, and I was wondering if you might address those. In your opening brief, you say, well, defense counsel must not have known about ineptitude because there's no intelligent reason not to request the instruction. And the government says, well, we should presume that he did know because competent counsel would know this. How do we get to the bottom of that? I mean, both of you are asking us to presume what trial defense counsel knew. How do we get to the bottom of that?
First, Your Honor, I believe that the focus on the defense counsel should be shifted to the focus on the trial judge. The trial judge has a sua sponte duty to instruct on all reasonably raised defenses.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yes, Your Honor.
You know, in 920, it says you have a duty to instruct on all the defenses in 916. I mean, I don't have the exact language here, but it's it was a description of any special defenses under RCM 916. Now, 916 is not an exhaustive list of defenses, and we've made that clear. But 920 doesn't say all defenses. It just says that specific defenses that are listed in 916. Did he have a sua sponte duty to instruct on the defense of ineptitude?
Certainly, Judge.
And why was that? Why would that be?
Just as Your Honor quoted, 916 and the idea of affirmative defenses, 916 is not an exhaustive list of every potential affirmative defense that exists. It is a collection of a certain amount of defenses.
And that's what we said in McDonald. But in McDonald, a defense of voluntary intoxication was requested and wasn't given. But 920 says you have to give an instruction, there's a sua sponte duty to give an instruction on the defenses in 916. And so even if 916 doesn't list them all, doesn't 920 just simply say you have to give the ones that are in 916?
Potentially, Judge. I would have to go back and take a look at 920 at that point, Your Honor. But certainly there is case law out there that says a judge has a sua sponte duty to instruct upon all reasonably raised affirmative defenses. Then the only question becomes, is this an affirmative defense and is it reasonably raised? And as we already discussed, as to how this court has defined what an affirmative defense is, ineptitude certainly fits under that umbrella or that rubric of an affirmative defense. It is something that it's not one of the elements that the prosecution has to prove. Therefore, at some point, it has to be raised. It doesn't necessarily have to be raised by the defense, but it has to be raised by some type of evidence in order to go against the elements, but to explain the elements. So ineptitude explains why somebody is negligent. And the president, by enacting the defense of ineptitude, has said, and we're going to find that that makes it not criminal in that certain situation, Your Honor.
Counsel, I'm sorry.
No, go.
I'm not sure, given what it says in the manual about ineptitude, I'm not sure how it doesn't negate an element. Right, it says, one of the things the government does have to prove, and you said this is not something the government has to prove, they have to prove that the defendant was derelict. And then the manual says a person is not derelict in the performance of duties if the failure to perform those duties is caused by ineptitude rather than by willfulness, negligence, or culpable inefficiency. So it seems like the manual is stating this is a negation of that element. You cannot be derelict if the reason you failed to perform your duties is ineptitude. How is not a defense of a negation of a specific element rather than a general excuse for why all the elements have been satisfied, but we're still not going to hold you criminally liable?
Yes, Your Honor. Because logically, it doesn't make sense that we can have something that is hypothetically individual to me or an individual to an appellant that only exists in the appellant's world, that somehow then is used to negate what should be the reasonable person standard. How could her mental health struggle that's only individual to her somehow negate what the reasonable person standard would be, which is the reasonable person doesn't have that mental health standard? And the standard within dereliction of duty for the negligence element is not the reasonable person who was similarly situated to the appellant. It's just the reasonable person. So just logically speaking, it can't be that ineptitude would negate the element of negligence in that situation, Your Honor.
So the president's just wrong.
No, Your Honor.
We have this language, and you're saying the language doesn't make sense, but are you saying we should therefore ignore this language, or are you saying that the language doesn't mean what I think it means, or it seems like it means? How do we deal with this provision if even if we agree with you that we don't think it makes much sense, what do we do with it?
In my reading, there's only really one word within the manual and within the Powell case itself from 1991 that would seem to indicate what Your Honor is talking about. And that is, at some point it says something to the effect of ineptitude rather than negligence. Because of the context of Powell, because of the context of the manual itself, it can't be the case, and I'm probably just repeating myself at this point, but it can't be the case that when the president said rather than, that he meant ineptitude instead of negligence. I believe that once you take a look at the context, rather than means ineptitude explains the negligence. It doesn't take the place of the negligence. Somebody can be negligent, but be inept as well. For instance, if I want to go out and wrench on my car, I have no idea how to fix my car. I can do that in a very negligent manner, but I've also never been trained to do that. Therefore, I'm inept. So I can hold kind of that negligence and that ineptitude simultaneously. One doesn't replace the other.
But when we look at the examples in the manual, it says a service member who, despite trying very hard and having been trained, cannot pass rifle proficiency. Right? They say they cannot be held derelict. Right, because they've put in a good faith effort. The reason they're failing is not really their own fault. They just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it seems like negligence doesn't really come. Like, where would negligence factor into that example? Well, what does negligence have to do with it?
Because I think that goes to the point that I was trying to make, that in that case, that person is inept. But that doesn't mean that the reasonable person wouldn't have been able to, with all the training and all the resources that the regular rifleman would have in order to pass or qualify at a range. The reasonable person should have been able to qualify at that range, but the reasonable person, and if that person could not do that, then that person is negligent. But then it goes one step further to say, well, that person that is doing the best at the range and they're making that honest effort, even though the reasonable person would have been able to do it, and this person wasn't able to do it, but they put that honest effort, that person is inept. But still, under the reasonable person standard, they'd be negligent. But that ineptitude explains that negligence, Your Honor.
So, counsel, you said that that the ineptitude defense was reasonably raised by the evidence. The record also reflects the admission by your client that she intentionally wasn't doing her work because of the personality conflict with the first flight supervisor. So would it not be within the reasonable range of choices by the military judge to say that admission contradicts or counteracts the evidence of ineptitude? You know, we have an intentional act versus one that allegedly, because of the mental health problems, the accused was unable to perform. So how do you address that? How do you square the admission by the accused with this argument that she was incapable of performing her duties?
Yes, Your Honor. For decades, this court has said that if some evidence reasonably raises an affirmative defense, the judge has a sua sponte duty to instruct the members upon that special defense. There's no case that I know of that says, unless the judge thinks that there's evidence out there that specifically goes against that reasonably raised defense. The standard at the end of the day is if some evidence reasonably raises an affirmative defense, that judge has a sua sponte duty to instruct the members. Now, it very well could be that there's other evidence out there that makes a person think that that defense doesn't apply. But the appropriate people to make that decision at that point are the members, the fact finders. And in this case, the fact finders were deprived of that ability to make that decision as to whether or not one thing in the record really means that she had a special defense or was inept, or is it something else that says she really wasn't inept, that this was some type of act or something like that. But it was the members' ability, or it was the members' responsibility and role to make that decision, but they were deprived of that ability because the judge never instructed them, Your Honor. And on that line, the ineptitude was, in fact, reasonably raised by this in this case. Joint Appendix page 176, the appellant's second-line supervisor stated, quote, some of the suspenses she, being the appellant, couldn't meet were due to her mental health status. On the next page, on 177 of the Joint Appendix, that same supervisor said that he knew that, quote, the only thing I could get was that she, the appellant, was unable to perform her task due to her mental health. Her first-line supervisor on Joint Appendix page 236 stated, stated that she had an opinion that the appellant was not capable of performing at any higher level because of the mental health stress that she was under. And then the appellant herself took the stand and explained that it was only after her mental health got better that she was able to properly perform her job at that point. There was certainly the defense of ineptitude due to mental health struggles was on the table in this case. The only question really becomes whether or not there was the intentional relinquishment of a known right. And importantly about all those quotes that I just quoted to you, it was the trial defense counsel that brought all those out. It wasn't inadvertence by the trial counsel. It was the trial defense counsel that went in and pulled all those out from the witnesses in this case. If you couple that with the fact that the trial defense counsel also made a pretrial motion for a mental health examination, also during voir dire asked the members, hey, members, do you believe that mental health could affect somebody's duty performance and the ability to do something? And they all agreed yes. And then the trial defense counsel pulled all these facts out that are point on with the defense of ineptitude. It doesn't make any sense that once we get to the very end, the one thing that the members were missing to tie all those facts together and give the benefit to the appellant at that point was an instruction on the affirmative defense. It just doesn't make any sense. There was, unlike the Malone case, there was no quid pro quo to give up. This is a fully litigated case. It would have only have made sense to take that one step further. And, Your Honor, I see that my time is almost up. May I briefly conclude?
Let me first see whether any of my colleagues have any questions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes.
Your Honor, in conclusion, in a case such as this, where the trial defense counsel repeatedly and intentionally elicits evidence that reasonably raises an affirmative defense, but then inexplicably fails to request an instruction on that reasonably raised defense, then the facts and circumstances of the case show that the intentional relinquishment of a known right did not occur. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Wilson. Major Barros?
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court, I am Major Vanessa Barros, and along with my co-counsel, Ms. Mary Ellen Payne, we represent the United States. Appellant is attempting to dress up a failure of proof defense to a mandatory affirmative defense to manufacture error where none existed. But there can be no plain and obvious error when no legal authority obligated the military judge to instruct on ineptitude. But trial defense counsel thrice declined to object to the military judge's proposed finding instructions. This was waiver, and there is no issue for this court to review. This court should affirm the lower court's decision.
So, Major Barros, I'd like to try to tease out the facts of this specific case from the government's position about the law. So, if you had a different case, hypothetical case, where, in fact, ineptitude was reasonably raised, would the military judge have a sua sponte responsibility to instruct the panel members on that?
No, Your Honor, because ineptitude is a failure of proof defense, and as Judge Hardy mentioned, if we look to the plain language of the MCM, specifically paragraph 18.C3D, it says a person is not derelict in the performance of duties if the failure to perform those duties is caused by ineptitude rather than by, in this case, negligence. And so in order for an affirmative defense to work, the government has to prove all essential elements. But then the affirmative defense then provides an explanation, justification, or excuse. So as this court stated in Kirby in footnote 4, a special or an affirmative defense coexists with the government's prima facie case. But per the plain language of the MCM, negligence cannot coexist with ineptitude.
Now, why is that? As Lieutenant Colonel Wilson was mentioning, when it comes to that particular element and negligence, it's the reasonable person standard. It's objective in nature. And here, when it comes to the issue of ineptitude, it is subjective, whether that service member was capable of actually acting as a reasonable person and not engaging in negligence.
Your Honor, I have like two responses to your question. So the standard for negligence is indeed objective. It's what a reasonably prudent person would do. However, this test is always applied under the same or similar circumstance. And that's how negligence is defined under the President's enumeration under Article 92. So the accused's skills and capabilities, such as their level of training, are going to be part of those circumstances. So even Powell does state that ineptitude is a fact-specific inquiry requiring consideration of the duties imposed. But you have to look at negligence and ineptitude to establish, like you have to look at all those facts together, which is required to determine the standard of due care. So it's not this two-step process that appellant would have you believe. Trying to figure out whether someone is inept is inherent to the essential step of trying to figure out if whether one is negligent, which is why the MCM's plain language does describe that you cannot be negligent and inept. It's either one or the other. So moving on, and I know there's been some concerns, and I believe Judge Maggs brought up whether the military judge had a sua sponte duty. And here, there's five reasons why, especially under the plain error standard, why the military judge did not have a sua sponte duty to instruct on ineptitude. First, ineptitude is not listed as an affirmative defense under RCM 916, so the military judge under RCM 920 did not have to give an instruction on ineptitude. Second, ineptitude does not meet the description.
Can you tease that out a little bit more in terms of we've said that it's not an exhaustive list. So how is it that then 920 doesn't incorporate the more expansive view of 916?
Well, 920 does specifically state if it's an offense listed under 916, and we do agree that not every affirmative defense is listed in 916. For example, in Torres, this court found that automatism is an affirmative defense, but Torres is distinguishable from this case because there the defense actually requested an instruction on automatism. Here we have no request for an instruction on ineptitude.
But I'm saying if 916 says these defenses plus others because it's non-exhaustive, why doesn't 920 capture the fact that there are other defenses out there?
Your Honor, looking at the language of the RCM, it does not capture, but this case, through this court's case law.
I'd like you to walk me through that a little bit. Why are you saying 920 doesn't capture the greater definition of defenses under 916?
I think I'm having a hard time trying to understand Your Honor's questions. 920 specifically states that you have to instruct the offenses listed under 916, and that's the plain language of the rule.
But 916 is not exhaustive.
Correct. But then guidance to the field, this court has provided guidance to the field through opinions that then state whether or not other defenses are required instructions, such as Torres, when this court delineated automatism as an affirmative defense. But even if we look at Powell, the seminal case on ineptitude, Powell does not state that ineptitude is an affirmative defense, and that's one of the reasons why the military judge did not plainly err here. And even if you look at the definition under 916A that actually it describes what a special or an affirmative defense is, it says, as used in this rule, defenses include any special defense which, although not denying that the accused committed the objective acts, is constituting the charged offense, denies wholly or partially criminal responsibilities. When we're looking at the objective act for negligent dereliction, we are looking at the objective act, as in this case, is negligent dereliction. That is the objective act. And if we look at the plain language of the rule, that defines ineptitude. Ineptitude challenges the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt negligent dereliction. And so appellant, especially under the standard of plain and obvious error, has not provided a reason for this court to show that the military judge here erred in not instructing on ineptitude, because it is not a required defense.
Counsel, while you're turning pages, I just want to go back to Chief Judge Olson's question and your response that notwithstanding the fact that 916 is, we've said is non-exhaustive, that you said that we have provided guidance to the field that defense counsel essentially should, if it's not listed, then you should request an instruction on it. Is that what your position is?
No, Your Honor, it's not our position.
Okay. I'm glad I asked, because
Yeah. But there has been case law that has then mentioned that a certain particular defense is an affirmative defense and therefore a required instruction, unless it's waived, and which leads me into my next discussion that trial defense counsel waived any challenge to instructional error. And three times the military judge asked both parties for feedback in shaping the instructions. First, the military judge asked if either party had an objection to instructions. Trial defense counsel said, no, sir. Then the military judge asked, what other instructions do the parties request? Trial defense counsel said, no additional instructions, sir. Then after a 30-minute recess, in which the military judge gave the parties time to read the written findings instructions, he asked if any party had objections to the appellate exhibit, which were the written findings instructions. Trial defense counsel said, no, Your Honor. This was waiver. And if this court found waiver in Davis, the 2020 case, in which trial defense counsel waived a required instruction on the elements of the offense that the government had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, it necessarily follows that this court should find waiver here, because trial defense counsel waived an instruction that was not a required instruction, because ineptitude is not an affirmative defense.
Isn't Davis distinguishable? In Davis, essentially, when it came to the element, the military judge gave an instruction on the element, but later the accused was saying, but I didn't like how he gave that instruction. So isn't that considerably different than this instance here, where if you're saying the military judge did give a description of the element, it was just a description of the element that later the accused didn't like. That's distinct from the situation here where there was no instruction whatsoever.
Your Honor, there could be a distinction here, but I would respectfully disagree that that's dispositive of the case here. You have to look where in the trial process, where the parties are at, when the judge is asking for this feedback on instructions. It is right before closing arguments, right before trial defense counsel is going to argue before the panel and defend their case. But of course, they're
thinking. Can you address my point about Davis? Why isn't that readily distinguishable between military judge saying, okay, I have to describe the element, this is how I'm going to give an instruction on this element, any objection, no, waiver, as compared to this, where the military judge doesn't give any instruction at all?
And I think this is the point where I'm getting at. I think that the parties were reading the instructions. They read the instructions before the military judge gave them one other opportunity to object. And, of course, trial defense counsel is thinking about what types of defenses, and they had the opportunity to shape the instructions, and they didn't. And so I think that's the point where I'm getting at, is that trial defense counsel, of course, they're thinking about ways to defend their case. And if they wanted a defense, they had three opportunities to request that, and they didn't.
Okay, let's do the overlay, however, of a military judge's sua sponte responsibility. I'm not asking you to concede on that point in this particular instance, but I am going to pose that hypothetical to you. Let's say that the military judge did have a sua sponte responsibility to instruct on ineptitude. In that scenario, is the mere fact that when the defense was presented with the instructions and said, no, we don't ask for anything more, does that mean waiver?
Yes, Your Honor.
So how is it that a military judge can have a responsibility imposed by the manual, and yet the mere failure on the part of an accused to remind a military judge of his or her responsibility is waiver?
Two responses, Your Honor. I would disagree that that would be a mere failure to object. There is precedent by this court, such as Ahern, Swift, even cases cited in Malone, that said very similar statements that trial defense counsel made here equate to waiver. But the military judge's sua sponte duty exists as a safety net to ensure a fair trial when an issue is simply overlooked.
So why doesn't that undercut your argument on this particular thing? It's been imposed on a military judge, sua sponte responsibility, based on my hypothetical, to instruct. How can the mere fact that an accused does not remind the military judge of his or her own responsibility under the manual mean we say equals waiver?
It's not, because an issue is not overlooked if the military judge is asking for feedback, is asking for the parties to assist in shaping instructions. And
so why doesn't that render this responsibility on the part of the military judge to sua sponte, that's the key here, sua sponte, engage in this instruction? Why doesn't that just gut this whole concept of a sua sponte responsibility if the government's standing here saying it has to be a situation where, essentially, the defense needs to remind the military judge of his or her sua sponte responsibility?
Your Honor, because I think there's going to be situations where your concerns are valid. Forfeiture will then could look like the military judge hands out the instructions and never asks the parties for any objections, and the defense remains silent. That could be an instance where a situation or legal issue is overlooked, and then it's on the military judge to then sua sponte, instruct on a defense. But even if we look at the case.
So what's the distinction between that and here?
The distinction here is that the distinction from my hypothetical is that the military judge never asks the parties whether they have any objections or any feedback to the instructions. The situation that we have in this case is that three times.
So you are saying then that an accused takes away the responsibility imposed on a military judge by the president?
Yes, and I think that there is case law in this court's precedent that supports that. And if we were to find
by essentially what is mere silence.
But I think what we have here in this case is not mere silence. Trial defense counsel said no objections or no additional instructions, sir.
Counsel, may I ask the question about waiver? It seems that there's a difference of opinion between you and counsel for the appellant regarding the specificity of the knowledge Your position seems to be that the trial defense counsel knew full well that these were going to be the instructions and he wanted no other instructions. He knew by saying no other instructions, Your Honor, that those were going to be the instructions. Appellant says, well, but he didn't know that he had a right to an ineptitude defense. And so the question is, what level of specificity do we look at the knowledge? I mean, I would think that in your case, that your position would be the same. Even if he didn't know that he had an ineptitude defense, that his client had an ineptitude defense, if he said, Your Honor, these are the instructions I want, that would be a waiver. Is that correct?
Could you just repeat the second part?
Well, it seems to me that the question is, your position is that even if he did not know that he had an ineptitude defense, if he said, Your Honor, these are the instructions I want. I want no other instructions. These are the ones I want. That would still be a knowing waiver.
Correct, Your Honor. But I think here, and Malone provides guidance to this, just as in Malone where multiplicity was a ground for dismissal, ineptitude, as, you know, appellant argues, is very specific to dereliction of duty. So any competent counsel, which trial defense counsel are presumed competent with the lack of IEC claim, any competent counsel reading the manual and reading the president's enumerations for Article 92 for dereliction would know that the ineptitude defense exists.
How do you respond to the appellant's argument that, well, but there's no reason not to ask for that instruction, so they must not have known. The only inference is they couldn't have known about that instruction because they didn't ask for it, and there's no intelligent reason not to ask for it.
Your Honor, we disagree with appellant, and we believe that it was known, but even to find waiver is not about whether the claims, whether the knowing right had to have any merit to it. The whole purpose of waiver is the relinquishment of a known right regardless of merit. And I will provide a supplemental citation, but this is from a Ninth Circuit case that does talk about waiver and the level of knowingness that's been litigated. And that is Nguyen 235 F3D 1179. But even just going back to this case, an ineptitude instruction would have torpedoed the defense's own theory that appellant was highly capable but unfairly targeted by poor leadership. Appellant is mentioning a whole list of statements where for the position that her mental health rendered her incapable. But when we are looking at those statements were not about her ineptitude or lack of skills and training to complete the job. Those statements were about her lack of time to complete her tasks due to mental health appointments. So even as appellant admitted in her own testimony, she discussed that she was out of the office due to her mental health appointments, not that mental health interfered with her abilities to do the job. And I believe it was Judge Johnson that brought up the point that this case was not a case of potentially ineptitude, but it's because that DH did not want, it's because appellant did not want to work for her direct supervisor. And there is plentiful evidence that shows that even before and after her mental health struggles, she was capable of doing her job. And defense has didn't provide no nexus at trial equating her mental health issues to ineptitude. And this goes to why it was not reasonably raised, but it also goes to why this was a knowing waiver, because it was not part of their theory of the case. I see my time is up, if I may briefly conclude.
Okay, further questions? Seeing none, you may conclude.
Your Honors, to find for appellant today, this Court would have to ignore a three-time waiver by defense counsel, invent a new classification for ineptitude as an affirmative defense, and disregard overwhelming evidence that appellant was a capable NCO who simply did not want to work for her supervisor. And this Court should affirm the lower court's opinion.
Thank you, Major Barris. Lieutenant Colonel Wilson.
Your Honor, starting with the last point, the idea that the defense's theory somehow controls the judge's sua sponte duty is just misunderstanding. There's plenty of case law out there from this court that says something to the effect of the defense's theory in a case does not control whether or not a judge has the sua sponte duty to instruct upon all reasonably raised defenses. If that case law means anything, it doesn't really matter what the defense's theory was in this case, Your Honor.
Counsel, can I ask the question?
Certainly.
Suppose appellant really didn't want to be found to be inept and said, listen, I don't want to be acquitted on the grounds that I'm incompetent. Don't instruct on that. Can you waive that sua sponte? I mean, is it possible to waive it? I know I've got a potential defense, but I just don't want to be acquitted on the grounds that I'm inept. Would it be possible to waive that, even though there's a sua sponte duty to instruct?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely. Even though a judge has a sua sponte duty to instruct upon all reasonably raised offenses, I think at that point, if the judge turns to the defense and says, I see the theory of ineptitude being raised by this case. Would you like me to instruct upon it? And the defense counsel says, no, sir, or no, ma'am. That's as affirmative waiver as possibly could be.
Yes, why, how much different is that from what happened here, where three times they said, yeah, these are the instructions. They're good.
It all comes down to the intentional relinquishment of a known right, Your Honor. In your hypothetical, it's very apparent that the defense counsel intentionally relinquished that known right to have the members instructed. In the reality, in the real case, all the proof on the record shows that there was never an intentional relinquishment of a known right. The trial counsel, the trial defense counsel, understood that they were important facts, understood to kind of elicit them and draw them out from all the witnesses, but didn't understand how they really factored into the play of this case at the end of the day, Your Honor. Going back to what the government said at the very beginning, the idea that this is not an affirmative defense is misguided. Although this court hasn't said it, as cited in our opening brief, the Tenth Circuit has said that an excuse type of defense, which they had already said was an affirmative defense, an excuse type of offense is one in which, quote, an actor suffers an impairment of his ability to control his conduct such that he cannot properly be accountable for it. That sounds an awful lot like ineptitude, the inability to abide by or to control one's own conduct. Her mental health prevented her from controlling her conduct to be able to properly do her job. And again, it's not whether or not, beyond a reasonable doubt, was she inept. The question is, was there just some evidence raised that the member should have been instructed on that defense? And the answer is obviously yes. As Your Honor pointed out, Davis is very distinguishable from this case for a number of reasons. And I see that I have that I'm over time. May I finish a brief thought, Your Honor?
You may address Davis.
Just to say that Davis is distinguishable for a number of reasons. As Your Honor pointed out, Davis was about the wholesale sua sponte duty to instruct upon the elements of an offense. The judge had instructed upon the elements of an offense. He just didn't instruct on how the defense liked a certain aspect of one single element of that defense. And with that, thank you very much, Your Honor.
Let me just check if there are any further questions. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Wilson. Case is now submitted. The court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until further order of the court.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.